Hello, hello. It's nice to see people coming on to the Zoom screens. That's always fun. And it looks like we may have some new people at on this call today, which is so great. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Lisa Lorraine Smith. I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And this is our Home Care Administrators Net Group, which was founded, as it were, by our co-chair, Marissa Gordon, who wrote me, I don't know, in 2019 and said, Lisa, hi, I'm a home care administrator. I'd really like to talk with other people. Is there a way to do that? And I said, sure, let's start a net group. You want to be the chair? And she's been it for the past 3 years. However, joining her this year is Dr. Will Harvey from JESA. There he is.
Ready?
And we've got a good conversation, it looks like today, with we had a big registration for this group of 15 people. So we're looking forward to hearing everyone talk about the challenges that we're all facing. If you can right click and put your community in your box, that would be good too. And I guess whoever's new to this call should introduce themselves, right? Would that be good? Just to say where you're calling in from and how long you've been there. And then Dr. Will or Marissa are going to take it away. So who's new? Deborah, have you been here before? Unmute and tell us where you're calling in from. There you
Sorry,
go.
yeah, okay. Always have to find that unmute button, right? Yes, I'm with Jewish Family Services Edmonton. I'm new to the organization as of the end of July this year. I'm working with the Aging and Community Support Project, as well as going into the Social Prescribing Project in December, I think. Yeah, something like that.
Elena, have you been here before?
No, it's my first time.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm from
Welcome.
Jewish Family Services, Edmonton as well, and I'm home support supervisor. We are working with Holocaust survivors and private clients.
Welcome. And Jason, have you been here before?
I've not been in this particular group meeting, but others. So I've met you before, Lisa, or at least seen you and been in trainings
Right,
with.
but
Yeah.
not for this group. So yeah,
Not this group.
yeah.
Yeah. So my name is Jason Hall. I'm the Director of Clinical and Social Services here in Silicon Valley, San Jose or Los Gatos, California. And I oversee the Holocaust Survivor Program, the Older Adult Services Program, and all related services. So we're actually talking right now about starting our own home care service line. So I'm just trying to gather as much information as I possibly can, as quickly as I can, because we're trying to launch it as early as January. So,
Oh,
yeah. So
wow.
if you have a turbo button, can you please share it with me? Because I need that. And it's nice to see everyone.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think that's it. Is anyone else new to this group today?
A few years ago, I think at the conference that I presented on opening a home health agency, and it the licensure requirements and regulations vary greatly state to state, but I think I accounted for that on one of the slides. So Jason, I can share that with you. It's a while ago, but there might be something of value that, maybe some sort of guidelines or what we did or how we did it that might be helpful, and I'll be happy to talk to you offline about it.
I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure.
I'll go ahead and put my email actually in the chat so that you
Okay,
can,
great.
if you
Thanks.
don't mind. Yeah, thank you.
So,
And I want to say one thing about that meeting or that workshop that you did. I think that one of the agencies developed their program based on that. I can't remember which one, but I'll let you know, Melissa.
wow, I would love to hear about
Yeah, yeah,
that.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
You got that.
exciting. Cool.
Yeah. Okay,
We have a lot of
we
people
have more
coming
people
in.
joining, and I'm not sure who E. Reed is. E, what's your first name?
Elaine Reed.
Hi.
Hi,
Have you been here?
everyone.
Have you
I'm with
been?
JFS Care at Home in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Okay, well, welcome.
Thank you.
And Tracy, you've been on this call before, haven't you? Home care?
Yes, ma'am. This is my second time.
Exactly. Okay, great. I think we're all set. You guys take it away. So someone should start this conversation.
Sure. Well, which topic do we want to kind of branch out with first? There were a couple from marketing to managing kind of board expectations. I kind of like that one that you suggested first. Oh, wait, you're muted, Maris. You're muted.
Thanks. Okay. The summary that was sent around in the invitation kind of summarized a little bit about where we left off last time. And it was kind of pulling together. People were expressing the frustration about the need to grow and looking for methods to do that. But then we have the flip side of, can we support that growth with the staff that we have? And that's kind of the conversation. We can come up with all the great ideas. How are we doing outreach and how are we marketing? And then on the other hand, those referrals come in and those opportunities, and can we staff them? And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, what's the reason? Is the staffing shortage still a reality in our areas? I know in our area, it's settled down a bit because most of the competition, we've all kind of started to pay the same. And so the caregivers are kind of just now settling down. It's not a constant search for who will pay more. Everyone's kind of at the same rate now and people are accepting more work. And then we did hear people saying how their programs, you know, we have a mix here of people representing agencies that have self-contained home health agencies versus programs within their organization. But I think either way, whether you're separate or within, the one of the missions of the program or agency is to provide revenue to the other areas in the agency. So some of us are still able to do that. And we did hear people saying they have not been able to, and then having the board understand what's going on and either be helpful or understanding. So kind of, we can just go around. I mean, hopefully these are topics that you guys do want to talk about. And, you know, from time to time, we don't end up with solutions, but we all feel better after we get it out. So we can, anybody that wants to open up, you know, with any comments on any of those topics, I'm sure one thing will lead to another and we'll have a good conversation. So I'm going to try to change my view so I can see everyone here. Gallery. Okay, there we go. So just unmute yourself if you want to give a chance to.
Is everybody here pretty active and working with their board of directors? Yes. Oh, okay. So let's start there. Those of you that are, is it just directly like for me, and for instance, like every other month, you know, I need to give kind of a 30-minute update, operational update, this, that, and the other. Who, I guess, is kind of used to that? And then I guess, how does that look like for your organization?
I can start. We have a committee that works with us to, you know, make sure that we're meeting our goals and objectives and revenue targets. And then obviously to problem solve. We too meet every other month as a board, but then also the committee meets at the opposite month to make sure again that we're staying on track. Right now our numbers are pretty good, but we're struggling to get to move forward and to build on what we have. Our revenue goes back to JFS to help support all the programs that we run, but we are a social enterprise of JFS designed for supporting revenue to keep the programs going at JFS on the clinical side.
Is kind of your board and committee, like, how have they approached this? I want to say stagnation. It sounds like you guys are doing well, but you're not growing. I can hear it like you want. How have they been responsive to that? Is there like finger pointing? Is there like other suggestions? It's just like sign of the times.
Because the revenue is okay. We're, no one's, putting the fire under us, but I am every day concerned about COVID, about staffing issues. We have not been able to really raise our pay. We're at, for live-ins, we're at $14 an hour, but at a 13-hour day. We do have some clients who are still grandfathered in, I should say caregivers that are grandfathered in at the 15-hour day. That's what we were doing earlier this year, but we had to switch that because it wasn't cost effective. Like, no, clients weren't going to pay that. So we had to change it because of the overtime rules. That's been difficult, but new staff is accepting of it. Old staff is rebutting it, but we've tried to structure it in a way that's enabled us to still honor the agreements we had with those caregivers to ensure that we have effective service all the way through the duration of those cases.
Can't even find a caregiver that wants to do a live-in.
Yeah, do you have, I was going to say, do you have a lot of live-in? Because yeah, we have so much, we have a lot of demand for it, but not a lot of supply.
I've had two in the past week. And
yeah, live-in here is highly, highly desired. And because we structure it with the overtime, because we're paying that overtime and we don't force people to do a 4-3, that has really been allowed us to attract. That's the number one requested position. We have about 15 cases at this time. Obviously, that fluctuates quite a bit. Big concern I have is that the ages of our clients, they're at the later stage of their lives. And so, you know, there's no guarantees with anything that we do. We're constantly changing. But, you know, when that revenue stream is in that pocket like that, those are the stable places can help you do other things. That also is like, it weighs on me every single day. I'm like, we just lost a gentleman. It was 103. Mm-hmm. And he was a rock star in every capacity, and that's not normal. But when someone comes in starting as a live-in at 95, that the longevity there is short, obviously.
And how many caregivers does it take for you to staff through your agency a live-in case then to avoid the overtime?
We traditionally work where we do a 12-2. So we have one caregiver who's covering off we're doing by a 2-week period. We have them working a full week and then a 5-day the second week. And then we have a secondary caregiver that comes in to cover that weekend. And that helps us with our bottom line. And then obviously reducing it to a 13-hour day. Our competitors in our neighborhood certainly do less than a 13-hour day, but we really struggle with how we're treating our caregivers. We value them. We want to try to pay them the most we can to ensure that they have a quality experience. And, you know, they choose this work, but yet they still are giving up quite a bit of life for this, you know, work.
There's also labor laws. I mean, we have to be able to justify it. I mean, because there have to be legitimate breaks and there has to be eight hours of sleep or at least 5 continuous hours of sleep. And there's all these rules and you want to keep them. And so actually we have a nurse registry in addition to the agency. So on the rare occasion that we do live in, we do it through the registry and avoid overtime.
Right.
How do you manage care at night? Because some people who need live-in care also need care at night.
It's a good question. We will assess the situation. If a caregiver isn't able to get the required sleep time that's necessary to provide care, meaning that we're in compliance with the law, but also that it's safe for that individual, we will sometimes have a secondary caregiver come in addition to that live-in and just be there for those hours. So let's say from like 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And so we add that. Of course, that is a very expensive endeavor. We have sometimes done that at the lesser rate. So we have companions at 28 an hour and we have PCA at 30 an hour. And even that, like we're seeing our competitors, those prices are maybe a little light in comparison to our competitors, but we're trying to make sure we don't lose any cases either because we'd like to grow further and we want to have work for our caregivers. So keeping that threshold seems to work. The other option we do is do 2 12-hour shifts, but again, financially, that's not always possible.
So is there anyone who wants to talk about challenges with growth versus staffing? Deborah?
Sure, I want to ask Elaine where you're located. You're in the U.S.?
We're in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Connecticut, okay.
Yeah,
because the rules are a little different. The employment rules are different here than in the States.
I'm curious from all of you guys what you're doing with insurance. We're struggling to offer insurance to our caregivers. What if in Connecticut, if we offer the insurance that we could afford as a small agency, and JFS as a whole is still very small here in Connecticut, in this office, I should say, we're about 35 people. And then our team, the challenge is if we offer it and it's extraordinarily expensive, which it is because we can't get a good plan because we're too small. Our caregivers have to take that plan, and it financially could be not feasible for them to earn a living. It's just unacceptable. And so it bumps them from the exchange in Connecticut, and that we're really, really struggling with. Really bad. It's breaking my heart.
That's only if insurance? They're working 30 hours a week, right? So like if you kept
for any full-time. Full-time. And then there's the coming on and off. But I mean, big picture, it's that if I offer this insurance, and let's just say it costs them $1,000 a month, but they could go on the exchange, which is Access Health for us here in Connecticut, which is the ACA, you know, let's say Obamacare, as some people would call it, it's cheaper and much more cost effective, and they can get some funding for that through, you know, various programs. I'm actually going to bump them out of those opportunities. And so like they're going to have terrible insurance. It's going to cost way more than what they can afford. And so it's like, there's no good option. You know, I can't do the right thing.
But there's, from my basic understanding in dealing with our benefits department, because we do offer benefits, the Affordable Care Act sets forth like very specific parameters for what's considered the formula for affordable. And so it doesn't, I think you should go back and speak to the benefits management department and really get a feel for the numbers, because it has to be deemed affordable. And if you're not offering something that's technically affordable, it wouldn't be within the scope of the rules.
Right. And we don't even, we can't even find a broker or an agent, like an insurance company, to actually take on these caregivers. Because
so then I guess there's your answer. Then you can't offer it. What? Wait, you're muted.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Does anyone pay the penalty rather than?
You don't want to hear that, Marissa.
What?
I said she doesn't want to hear that.
Oh, because then there's a penalty, you're saying, for not?
No, there's a penalty if you don't pay. So I'm curious, does anyone pay the penalty rather than offering insurance?
Oh, there's a penalty if you don't offer insurance and you have a certain number of employees?
Yes, there is a penalty, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so either way, it's bad.
Or you can keep everyone at 29 hours.
Well, we offer, but just to your point, Elaine, a lot of folks are priced out of it. We do a 6-month look back and try to average their hours. And if they fall into a full-time bucket, they can get full-time benefits. If they fall into part-time, they get part-time. But really, it's really not cost-effective if they're anything else but full-time. I was looking into other options. There is a company that I'm really trying to press our executive leadership to look into called Vitable. I don't know if you guys have heard of Vitable Health. They're technically billed and marketed as a wellness program, but they do offer PCP care. They do offer urgent care services. They do offer a decent formulary for prescription drugs for caregivers. No vision or dental, unfortunately. I don't want to do the whole spiel, but I've heard their presentation many a times. But it does seem like a lower cost, and really, depending on the size of your agency, the size of your caregiver staff, like let's say you had like 150 caregivers, which would be awesome. But like, you know, the agency absorbs a cost. So it's like you would pay $2,000 a month to cover those folks, and they would get kind of unlimited access, all via telehealth, medicine, stuff like that. But it's not everything, right? It's not like a golden goose, like, you know, Blue Cross program, but it's something to hopefully separate you from your competitors and also, you know, offer this to your caregivers.
Would you be able to put that in the chat?
Oh, yeah, so we absolutely. Could,
that would be wonderful. Absolutely. Thank you so much. That sounds like a really good, absolutely. Something to look into and see if it's possible.
And if you are really, really into it, I can get you in contact with the reps that I've been meeting with.
I would be very grateful for that.
And I'll put my contact in for
he knows everybody.
On the East Coast.
Maybe put your contact in the chat,
yes,
too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I heard of agencies that struggled and worked and had to keep their caregivers below 30 hours a week, which is like, I don't even know how we would manage. There was at the height of the shortage, everyone was like overtime or full time.
Absolutely.
And we do a 3-month look back. Dr. Will does a 6-month look back. There was somebody I came across did a year look back.
Yeah, we did a year. We did a year.
It's a lot less work, but it's also risky because if it takes a year to get on, it takes a year to get off. So they might not work for you, but they'd have to mail in their premium checks.
Right. And that's very risky because that's virtually, yeah. It's very, and that actually could deter them from coming back to you.
Right.
It's almost like paying the penalty is the better answer, but it feels wrong.
It does, yeah.
It's not why we do this work. We do the work to support our community, but we're also looking to support the caregivers. That's it's both sides. It's not just one side.
Well, then we originally started talking about like growth and reporting to boards. I'm curious to anybody else, even those that don't have a direct, I'm sure everybody has a board somewhere in the organization, but if you're not directly involved or directly reporting to them, what challenges or operational headaches have you guys had with either, whether it's growth or staying competitive in your market that you've tried to personally, I guess, work through? Yeah. Go ahead.
There. So I think I mentioned at our last meeting that, we're undergoing an evaluation of our program and in comparison to other programs, mostly in Canada. And the board is involved and they struck a committee. It's called the JFS Board Home Support Committee. So we have board members, we have people who know a lot about geriatrics in the community. So we have, an interesting combination of people, and we have been reaching out to different home support agencies. I think, Tricia, you met with Cindy, who's the director of programs and partnerships. And I have met with a few people as well. And now in December, we're going to get, it's called an environmental scan. In December, we're going to get the feedback for what is missing in our program, different suggestions, that we may make. It's not absolute, but we may make because we have to generate money for the program. But just as it happens, we were in a bad spot, I'd say about 4 or 5 months ago, and we seem to have turned a corner when we increased our rates to clients, increased our hourly rate to home support workers, that's what we call our caregivers, and now we are making money for the agency. So we are in a very different place than we were. It's like so weird, like to make that transition of being worried that your program's no longer viable to all of a sudden you're now making money with these changes. We do have less staff. So that's helpful in a way, because we have to pay, this was legislated in, I think, 2022, we have to pay 5 sick days to all the staff. So that was a big cost to the program, but we have less staff now. And we also seem to be getting applicants who are from the Ukraine. And I think I mentioned it last time, there's an issue with language. We have some of them know very basic English, some know very little English, but they have to be able to know some English in order to know our policies, procedures, and protocols. But we have hired some, so that has helped us.
Do you anticipate another rate increase? Like, for instance, I know we don't do any other introductions, but for those that don't know, I've been with Jessa for a little over a year now. In the past year, we've had to raise rates three times just to get to
wow.
a competitive part. I mean, in Montgomery County, Maryland, there are 235 competitors. Just doing that three times got us like in the middle. Like we were the lowest in the area, which and that's awesome from, you know, an altruistic right. standpoint, but like we have to, you know, we got to pay bills. Exactly. Has anybody else like had to really be, or yes. do you anticipate doing that again? There's talk that, you know, we're thinking about sometime in quarter one of next year. Are you guys considering that? Is anybody else thinking about
that? Well, we were also like the lowest rate and we would get huge amount of referrals from the hospitals, from health right. units, from everybody. And then it was just, it wasn't viable anymore. And right. we had to increase. And I think over 2 years increased about four or five times.
Yeah.
And now, you know, things are working out, but we probably will have to increase because we're going to have to raise the rates again for our staff in order to keep them.
And you mentioned like, did you say it was somebody outside doing this environmental scan? Both. Like kind of like, this, oh, okay. Like both. Anybody else? I'm curious only because our agency did that as well through the summer and they just finished and one of their, it's kind of like a SWOT analysis. I think we're all familiar with that, right? The strength, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Like one of the things that they suggested for Jess as a whole is possibly expansion into Northern Virginia. Like does anybody else's agency like engage in that on yearly, every other year, just kind of looking at opportunities? That's something you guys would like done? Like, I mean, since we kind of started off talking about like boards, like for us, it had to be approved by the board, right? Like to even just hire the consultant. But, and then Jason, if you guys are considering like getting stuff started, I would imagine you guys have already scanned your entire environment and found out where you can expand. But I don't know if anybody else has tried to do that.
I guess not.
No.
You're the only one who's expanding.
I know sometimes the agencies have like a very strong degree of strategic planning up to the point that the program is created
right.
or the agency is created. And then the agency gets its own board. And sometimes the strategic planning just kind of falls away. They just, you know, they achieve their goal of opening this program or agency and expect it to just now run. So that can happen, but anybody, I mean, we would want to encourage and empower anyone who has that kind of position to encourage those to reopen, you know, brainstorming and not just make it, you know, one or two people's responsibility to take on all of the burden of how to make this a viable business. Whether or not you donate your money, you're still a business.
Yep.
So
I'd like to switch gears to either talking about, well, we've talked about the caregiver shortage too, but I'm curious if some of our new folks take, or we can kind of push the marketing. I mean, for one, they go hand in hand. We have marketers, really good marketers for our agency. They're bringing in business, but if we don't have the caregivers to support them, well, that's just data we're collecting. Are you guys kind of finding the same headaches or?
Absolutely. Can we worse? Like I said, COVID. Holiday time, making sure we have enough caregivers to cover the assignments we have. So, you know, we want to be like a few decks deep to ensure that we can, you know, manage what's coming with regards to people's schedules. So we're very cautious about that growth. I am trying to do some marketing, you know, in some of the local papers and things of that, as well as the senior centers that happen to be super close, but it's tiny, you know, just to like sort of keep our name in the forefront, but we're not being super aggressive because we're concerned about the ability to staff. Perhaps after the first of the year, we can think more deeply about it. And also there's costs that, you know, we're trying to make sure we meet the revenue targets for the whole organization because COVID really hurt us significantly. We're still digging out of all of that. And we're the bright light in the circumstance. So we've got to make sure our revenue streams stay solid. Otherwise it's going to hurt a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I carry that and that's hard. So I'm grateful to have this group to come to and I keep trying to get here, but it's hard. Sometimes.
Yeah. You got a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
Does anyone else kind of set like as far as like bringing in caregivers, despite, you know, business coming in, which always like fluctuates, try to bring in X amount of caregivers per month to kind of keep, you know, a pipeline in? Or anybody else kind of like, we set a very, I think, easy goal. Hopefully we haven't always hit it, but like at least bring in 10 new caregivers a month, keep them on, try to get them working, kind of keep on an active roster. Does anybody else kind of work with any numbers like that?
Well, we try to do that, but what happens is that we hire people, we spend the time doing all the paperwork, then doing their orientation. Then all of a sudden we're not getting referrals.
Right.
We can't fill their schedule. So they move on to another agency and we spend all this time.
Or their what the availability they say was is different now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we tell people it's going to take a month for us to build a schedule. Can you hang on? We say that in the interview. We always say yes.
And then but they don't.
They need money and they find another job. So, you know, it's a very hard balance. It really is. The best thing would be is if we could offer them a salary of some sort until we get them a schedule, but we're not in that place.
Someone in our group once did that, right? Do you remember, yes, Lisa?
I think Debbie did it. I think
that would be incredible.
Someone once said that we take a group of people, we pay them a salary regardless, but they agree to be available.
Yeah.
And then some people handled like on-call that way and weekends. I wanted to say, I saw Tracy nodding her head before. Maybe you want to chime in and tell us what's going on with you.
I know it's very difficult for our agency to hire one caregiver a month. And we're Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, full benefits. In Florida, we pay $15 an hour. And it's just like homemaking. It's not even CNA or home health aid. It's light work. And yet we have a terrible labor shortage. We can't seem to hire one a month.
Where are you again?
Really?
In Gulf Clearwater, Coast, Florida.
I just put it.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. You know, yeah. So, you know, we're in Boca. Is there any budget for marketing? Are there any like newspaper articles or any kind of social media, anything out there to bring attention? And you said it's light. You can call your caregivers companion?
Yes.
So we're doing, I mean, we have two kinds. We have companion and we also have like the home health aid hands-on. So we have like the social component versus the personal care and ADLs. And our companion program was very strong. It enabled us to open the home health agency. We had 75 clients and 50 companions. And our companions were very specific profile. They were younger seniors wanting to have like supplemental income for their Social Security and their retirement. And so it was great. And it just was decimated during COVID. And so now the need is there, greater than ever. And the companions that worked for us for years, they didn't want to return, like 5 came back. So we're having this renewed effort. We're trying to just get the word out. We're trying like social media articles in the Sun Sentinel or the Boca Tribune here and there. And it does bring in calls and interest. Do you have companions that are also that profile, like younger seniors?
Yes, half of my workforce in my program, they are 62 and higher. Half of them.
Right.
Yeah. So. And again, it's light duty work. It's not like you have to work holidays or overnights. But yeah, most of my workforce is over 50.
So how are you recruiting?
We do the Great American Teach-In in high schools for people who are looking to maybe not go to college or a trade school, but maybe have some familiarity with working within their family or maybe caregiving for a grandparent. We also advertise on Indeed and Clear Company. And we also go to the senior centers because we have other programs and we market each other's programs. So counseling markets homemaking. And we have a wait list of 400 people. But this program is free to the seniors we serve. It's funded through the Older Americans Act.
Oh, it's free to your clients. Okay. Yeah. That's going to increase demand astronomically.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing. I think it's a good idea to go to senior centers. Is it a good idea?
It is.
You can get
clients and companions.
Yep.
Huh?
But they have no shortage for clients. No one does. I mean, most people don't these days. It's the staffing them with the right match. Yeah.
Can I add a little bit? I will tell about Alberta, and I will share now basic rules. I think I shared or not. Okay, in Alberta, we have basic rules for caregivers. We can, our workers, they can work 264 hours in month. And I think it helps. How can I share? For everyone.
I don't know. Lisa, is she able to share something with us?
Yeah, Natalia.
No, I just chat. I cannot share in chat. In chat.
Are you trying to share your screen or just share?
No, no. My message.
Oh,
to chat?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Oh, I see. There's a little icon that's next to the smiley face.
Yeah, I know. I asked. And, okay. I will try. And it helps, obviously, to keep our workers because it's almost 60 hours per week they can work. If, for example, we don't have enough workers, just call someone and the workers, they want to work a lot. They need money because we have many Ukrainian people and we don't have a lot of problem like to find the workers. They need extra hours. Just in case, check your rules, because before when I started the home support supervisor, we had standards only 40 hours per week. But because I had experience in another company and I suggestion we can choose these rules and it's better because you understand if you have limit hours for caregivers, it's not easy. But if almost not limits, you can send anyone and especially people looking for additional hours.
I think in the United States, the overtime laws are federal.
Yeah.
Okay.
But maybe outside, maybe in Canada, you guys have different regional rules that can apply. And maybe there are special rules that are implemented when there's a great influx of, of refugees or immigrants.
Yeah. And we have benefits, we have and salary. I think one of the higher salaries.
Yeah. It's grateful you're not having the caregiver struggles. Is your business matching up with your workforce or?
We work like we have Holocaust survivors program and now we started like private and I hope we are looking for fund from government and let's see what happens in the future.
More workers than work. That's not a bad problem. Deborah, sorry.
Yeah, I work with Elena. I do the private pay and the aging and community seniors. And so what we're finding is we're getting more calls for housekeeping. And what we have is HCAs. So, an HCA gets paid $5 more than what a housekeeper does. So they don't really want to take on housekeeping shifts. The other thing is when I get HCAs that want to work with us, which is fabulous, they just phone us up and say, hey, we heard about you. We want to work with you. But they have such weird availability shifts. It's like, how does that work? So like one lady said she works Friday and Monday on one weekend and off Saturday, Sunday. And then the next weekend, it's the opposite.
Wow. That's impossible.
What are you supposed to do with that?
And then I had another guy and he works 4 days on and 4 days off. So his days off move every 4 days. What? So I was like, I can't schedule him regularly. He'd be good for on call or just to pick up a shift and stuff like that. But yeah, it's really, that's hard to work with.
It is.
Regular. So, and then you've got them that don't want to take on less. We had one guy who started and she was doing almost four days a week, doing 6 hour shifts, I believe. And then she was replacing someone. And when that worker came back, she had nothing and she didn't want to do 3-hour shift 3 days a week. She says, no, it's not worth it. It doesn't work in my economics. And I was like, well, I'm sorry. You know, so, okay, then I guess you're going to sit on your fanny or find something else because, you know, yeah, it's tough. Anyway, that's our frustration, right, Elena?
We found other, like, I'm curious, I'm sure everybody kind of has those similar stories. Any other, I don't say like tricks or anything, but anything to help navigate that? Like, I know I've had it because there's so many competitors just in Montgomery County, like everybody else. Like, we've just had some really uncomfortable sometimes conversations. Say, look, why do you have this availability? Like, is it because you're working with two or three other agencies? Well, if so, let's have a conversation and just be honest with me. What are that, what nickel more is that other agency offering to just try to, I don't know, just try to get them, you know, to take up two more shifts for us. Are you guys having those other issues? I don't know how remote or how dominating everybody else's agency is in their market, but just kind of curious.
Well, we tried to do that. And some of the, our staff wouldn't even accept the, we would more than match the other agency.
Right.
And they wouldn't want to leave because they were so devoted to their clients.
No, see that, okay. Say, yeah, that you can't.
You know, it's a nice thing, but
wow.
Yeah, so it didn't really work so far.
I'm not saying I haven't had that, but typically you offer somebody $2 more. It's like, all right, let's see. Yeah, wow.
In here in Connecticut, we're sharing all the same caregivers. And that actually is a problem with, like, from a performance perspective, is that caregivers will go in with the shirt with the other agency to our job. And that is really,
that's a,
like,
huge problem.
It's like, it makes me crazy. And we don't have monies for shirts, although I'm really working towards that. It's a big goal of mine to try to have that with our badge and try to create a brand with a badge, you know, something like this, you know, trying to make something out of nothing. But I'm like, how do I stop that? You know, that's just poor representation all around. It's really, it's quite, it's embarrassing and it's really unprofessional. But I also understand here in Connecticut, people have to probably work, you know, the two jobs because they can only work typically 40 with one. Not many of our clients are paying overtime. Some do because they want that continuity of care, but many cannot afford that.
We certainly had that.
Or their long-term care policy won't pay for it.
Are there any agencies here that have gotten large enough to consider doing a fundraiser of their own?
Yes, in Connecticut, we just had, I don't know if you guys have heard of the Key. They were previously known as the as home care assistants. Their goal is to be the largest home care agency in the world. And they just bought the largest home care agency in Connecticut, which is, oh my gosh, Companions and Homemakers. And so they are dominating our market, which, you know, is pros and cons. They're a giant. They're becoming more like a machine, which does give us a competitive edge as a mom and pop sort of presentation. And the intimacy we can provide with the hands-on connection with our families and our caregivers. But it is a concern because they're going to dictate how we play in the space eventually. I mean, maybe not this moment, but it's coming. And so that's a definite concern. And they can do things that I can't do. I don't have money to throw around to give extra anything. Our, like I said, our base for caregivers on live-ins are 14, but we're up to 17, sometimes even 18 or 19 too, for some of our PCA. And we don't pay a less value for homemaking a companion, although no one wants to do that. No one, everybody wants to do the companion part, but no one wants to do cleaning at all. Awesome. Cleaning is like, so we're finding people just want, like, they won't drive a car for somebody. They won't drive their car. You know, they won't drive the client's car. And that's part of the reason people want us, is they want to try to continue their lives. So it feels like the caregivers themselves want more specialized experience. So we're trying to dig a little bit into that and understand what they're wanting and how we can marry those two things together.
But you find that that's new? Oh, sorry, Marissa.
Yeah. Did you say something about fundraising? Everything you just said is all important. I was just wondering, asking if any agency, if you're going to do a fundraiser.
The fundraiser, yes, I'm sorry. What led me to is that the Monster Company is not, they're not doing fundraisers, but they're like dominating the space and like pretending that they're doing that kind of thing for their caregivers, but they're not really. Like fundraising for the Alzheimer's Association. They're fundraising like in that kind of capacity.
I just mean like our JFS is a big JFS and they have a gala and all of that.
But yeah,
we've gotten to the point where I'm starting to, like, for example, we've had a couple of very appreciative clients, children, wanting to send a donation, right, in appreciation. And technically, we can accept a donation. I'm a nonprofit. But traditionally it was agreed, you know, the organization that gets donations is JFS because we're going to just donate it back to them anyway, right? So I tell them, thank you so much. You can send it in recognition of our work to Ruth and Norman Rail's Jewish Family Services. But the CEO of JFS is in agreement with me that we've kind of reached to the point where I think we can have our own fundraiser, like an event to raise funds. We're a nonprofit. And there are a lot of people who recognize the need to subsidize home care for those who can't afford it. And
I think that's a really smart move, Marissa.
Yeah, one category of clients we have are clients who get subsidized home care through JFS. They have a small funding source for subsidized home care. It's very limited to 8 hours a week about, which is really doesn't even begin to address some people's needs, but it's better than nothing. And so they can get 8 hours a week through this subsidized program. Basically, they call us, they say they can't afford anything. We get them to JFS, to the financial assistance department. They process according to their standards for qualifications. And if they qualify, send them back to us and they pay for them. And sometimes they have a copay between $1 and $5 an hour, but sometimes it's free up to about 8 hours a week for short term. For long term, it could be 12 hours a week if it's like short term, somebody broke their arm, let's say, and needs some help. But I just think that as nonprofits, we could start thinking about that. People, you know, those of us struggling with our budgets, there's a population of people that are charitable, and what we do is very worthy.
Especially to the children of those who you're helping.
Right.
You know, my mother has just hired a companion, 8-hour companion in Virginia from a company that isn't a JFS because there isn't a JFS where we live. And the person doesn't drive, just like you said, Elaine, won't drive, you know, won't do this, won't do that. I'm like, well, how is she helping you? I'm not sure. Like, is this won't do, you know, cleaning, you know? So I said, that's not the right person for you. You know, that's what she needs. So I could understand how hard it is personally. And also I hear it all the time through you all, but it's tough, right? People complain, you want to give them the right services, but you don't have the person. So I get it.
Yeah, we only hire people who are willing to drive clients, but we're just—
You know, you're between a rock and a hard place if you don't have it.
So if they say no, it's no, I can't do anything.
You get forced like, behind the wheel.
You get like angry clients. What do you mean you can't stay up 2 hours? That's all I need. Right. Like, I'd love to. I don't have anybody willing to do it.
What's happening in Richmond? You have a pretty robust program, as I recollect. You're muted.
Oh. There we go. There I am. Hi. I love that. You know, we're actually doing pretty well. We've seen a lot of growth, clients, and we've been able to keep up, but just keep up, right? Like, we're always like, okay, we're right there. So we've had like a record number of cases in the and coverage, and everything has worked out, but it's precarious, right? It's very dynamic. We have people coming and going. So I am hiring and interviewing, and people are coming back and people are leaving, and it's just extremely dynamic. I mean,
I love that term to describe.
Very.
You guys are all doing. It's true. It's probably very dynamic.
It is.
And it's positive.
Yeah. you know, but we have the same issues that everybody else has spoken about. I hired two lovely women, and we went through the whole process and had orientation on a Friday. And they called me on a Monday morning after going through the entire thing and said, I'm so sorry. And we were in competition with like another larger private agency, like Care Advantage, somebody like that. they called me back and they said, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to come to work for you. We got this split shift private pay case. She's doing the 12 hours, I'm doing the 12 hours, and we're going to go do that. We can't compete with that. No. We're an agency. And we went through the entire process with them. And so, you know, my average of things working out, it's about 50%. 50% of people come for an interview.
That's good.
50%. And I've kept it at 50%.
That's good, she says.
Yeah, 50% is good.
My some of my successes lately have been with students, which is a totally different market. So we are in a university town here in Richmond. We have the University of Richmond and VCU, and VCU has a marvelous gerontology program. People that want to go into care management can work on their master's. So it's a graduate program. There's also an undergrad program that feeds into it. That's like a general health studies program. And then you can choose which direction you want to go. And I spoke with the administrator of that program, and we've been getting student referrals, and we're going to use some of our students to be liaisons to bring more people in. They've been wonderful. That's been really good. And they will work all kinds of cases with all kinds of people all over the place because they want to learn about what they're going to do once they graduate. And they'll work 40 hours a week. So that's been fabulous. Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah. Like
getting yourself involved with the university in lots of different levels, you know, it's good.
Yeah. And we have them here as interns as well in a different departments. We're going to bring a human resources intern in for the first time in January that's going to work with me specifically on recruiting. So we're, you know, we're kind of tapping the student market a little bit here. And it's small, but it's growing.
Lisa, do we have to go over the dates?
So we have our next dates for the NEC group. And the first one is going to be February 1st in 2023. I can put them in the calendar. I can put them in the chat. That would be a lot easier, I think.
Yeah. February 2nd.
So, yeah, February 2nd.
What did I say? Yeah, February 2nd.
That Thursday, yep.
Thursdays at 1:00. So I'll put them in the calendar separately. And we are looking for a co-chair if anyone here is interested in joining Dr. Will, because I think potentially Marissa, who has been such a stalwart leader for us, I think you've been doing it for 4 years and it really is a 2-year commitment, but if anyone's interested, it's really not a difficult position. I don't think you could talk a little bit about it, Marissa.
I loved doing this. I started out, like Lisa said, I didn't know anybody around the country, and I didn't even know about NJHSA. And I went to the CEO of JFS because I was so isolated. I said, you know, I wanted to join like a CEO group that I learned about through the Home Care Association of Florida. And she said, you know, why don't you start within the JFS community before you go to the private community? And that's how this was developed. And obviously it was really needed because none of us would even know, just hearing each other and knowing we're all doing the same thing and occasionally being able to get a resource from one another. It's just helpful.
And getting great ideas during COVID. Oh my goodness. It was a support group. Remember that?
So if anything, it's just a benefit to have the group, and it's not difficult. It's every once in a while, you kind of just have to remember what was a hot button item for people. You might think that something is interesting, but it turns out the meeting goes a different direction. We want to just be able to get ideas from everyone that's part of the group, because it's your group. It's not just like somebody dictating. You guys should provide ideas of what you want to talk about and what kind of help you think you need. We've always been very happy with the round robin and just talking updates, and one thing leads to another kind of thing.
So and you have Dr. Will as your co-chair.
Right. And then exactly.
Well, no, I benefited from it, feeling like I'm not alone and that other people are obviously going through the same struggles. But honestly, some of the conversations that, you know, even I've been privy to in this group have sparked ideas that I've been able to take back to my agency to try to move the needle somewhere. I would hope that everybody gets that at least at some point during these meetings.
It's very helpful. It's nice to hear different perspectives on how people are running it differently. It's helpful. Okay. We've had some really good sessions. So I encourage anybody who has the interest in taking on a little bit more of a leadership role to guide the group. I would welcome you to let Lisa know.
It looks good on your resume, National Anyway, you all know me. I put my email in there too. That would be terrific. And we'll look forward to seeing you in a few months. And Jason, oh my goodness, when you come back in February, you want to hear that it's up and running. I mean, oh my, you did it. That'll be.
Well, you'll probably be hearing from before then. This is my opportunity to kind of cherry pick ideas. Like, what are you all doing? And I could sit here and talk to you all day about what we're doing. I just didn't want to take up everybody's time because it's a little bit discombobulated. We're trying to just synchronize our thoughts right now. So, but I've got, you know, you were foolish enough to include your emails. In your
boxes, here, but I'll put mine.
You can expect to hear from me a lot.
Very friendly, and they like to offer ideas because you are one of the smaller groups in the network because there aren't as many, you know, home care agencies. So, you can be a tight knit group because there's a smaller number of people. Like our Holocaust Services Professionals group probably has 320 people in it, right? So it's a lot bigger. This is small. And as I've said to every group, every small group is a gift. You always get something out of it. I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday season, right? We're not going to see you in a happy new year, but if you want to be in touch, you know how to find me. And if you have questions, I can send it out to the group and you all can communicate that way. So we hope that you do so. And thank you, Marissa. And thank you, Dr. Will, for your leadership.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Good luck at that conference later this week.
You.
Before we go, I just want to say one tiny little thing that just I remembered. Lisa, I think we started a Facebook group.
We have a Facebook group.
We started a Facebook group before we even started the Net group. And it wasn't very active. And that's what prompted the Net group because... I was talking to myself on that. So I think if you could send out the link, because I was thinking, what's a good way for us to be able, you know, we are all used to texting, instant messaging. And I believe if we all got onto some sort of forum together, we'd have a lot more interaction in between meetings.
To put out there, maybe this is a pin it for next time, but I don't know how many of you guys heard of or use Slack. I know we use it kind of here with a bunch of like local folks. It's literally like a private Twitter group, honestly, that we could literally all be on in real time. But
I'd be into any of that. I think it would be helpful. I think time passes and we think we would like to reach out to each other. And then it's like cumbersome and we have to figure out who was that again and where were they? And then
on everyone. Here is I'm going to open it up and then give you the it's. Here is the Facebook. Where's the chat over here? Let me do it to everyone here. You can copy and paste into your browser.
Great.
And then you ask to join. Do it right now. You ask to join and you'll be a part of this group. And Slack would be great too. I don't know, Slack, next time, Dr. Will, maybe you can get us on
Slack. I can set it up. Yeah, I can set it up, but we'll do it for the next meeting because I don't want to rush it and guide people through. But that's a cool thing. Literally, it's like we're just instant messaging each other, and then other folks can add other people in the industry that they meet, and that's how we grow, 15 people to 100, right? So.
Wowza. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll talk soon.
All right. I apologize because I know it's 2:00. Can we just add, I'm very curious for the next agenda, how do you validate that your workers are actually on shift? Mm-hmm. And what system are you using for like a clock in, clock out?
Sure.
That would be helpful because we're starting a training on a new system and it's been quite difficult troubleshooting the different levels of workers with their tech skills.
And it's been very...
Can you say that to me again so I can write it down? How do you validate what?
How do you validate that the workers are actually at the shift for the time of the shift for like a clock in and clock out?
Okay. Down.
What system are you doing, Tricia? What is it?
We're using, it's the same developers as our scheduling system, which is Qualicode Maya, and they've developed an app called Sarah. But it has a lot of glitches.
Okay. What is that WorkMerk? I think there may be something about WorkMerk. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Dr. Will and Marissa, but we'll do that for.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Terrific. Thanks. Thank you all. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Bye, everyone. Be safe.
Bye, Israella, and goodbye.
Bye.